My name is Lisa Nicole, singer, songwriter, creator, realtor, lover of my cats and hiking, and well, I couldn't be here without coffee, and I'm your host of the Wild Hearts Podcast. Season 2 brings deep, heartfelt stories, inspiration, and education from guests based here in BC. I'm so glad you're here. Thank you kindly for listening. Now let's get to the show. Welcome, Prudence.
Thank you.
I'm so excited to do this with you. You're one of my favorite people to work with, which you probably obviously already know. But just to give a bit of background of how I met Prudence, my second album shoot for Come Find Me, she was dating the photographer and he brought her on as a stylist. And basically, I haven't worked with the photographer again. He's great, but just a little bit out of my budget. But Prudence and I have become great friends, and there was no way I would let her get away from me. So flash forward, and you've now styled me for 2 album shoots and 3 music videos. And to intro Prudence a bit, her work has moved more towards interdisciplinary. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did.
Okay. Art and the relationship of being a Native woman existing in the land and working with other women against societal norms and gender. And this will be part of our convo today, but we will be touching on some behind the scenes of her work on The Bachelorette and the relationship of women in the film industry, as well as some of the projects we've worked on. So the term interdisciplinary, that's a mumble jumble.
A little bit of a mumble jumble.
I had to Google that. And when I did Google it, it was not so clear to me, the definition, but I'm kind of getting the sense it means creating your art in different forms. Tell us about what it means and why you do it and how you came to where you are with this art today.
Yes. So before we begin, I would like to take a moment to acknowledge we are on unceded territory of the Coast Salish peoples of the Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Musqueam Nations. Nice. And I am of the Heiltsuk Nation in Bella Bella. I started out working in art as primarily a painter and have developed different disciplines of art that relate to one another. This means that I focus on a subject and research it, such as right now I am working with art relating to land and culture. This includes painting, poetry, letters to the land, and food given to the land. I begin with a topic and branch out to what I believe are the most important aspects for myself to focus on in the present, such as our building of communities and how land relates to that. Everything for me begins in nature, and we have so much to learn from animals, how they create communities and plants, how they grow. The beautiful thing about nature is that it doesn't wait. It doesn't ask. It blooms and decays all on its own. Both of those processes are natural. I place my own faith in this and how we build ourselves and our lives as humans in constant change and in growth. We are so small and so big at the same time. Mm-hmm. And when we can acknowledge both of these perspectives as fractals of each other, then we can do the work in larger things.
Wow. Well said.
Thank you.
When you talk about your artwork, you said like letters. Yes. Letters of poetry and food given. What do you mean by that?
A couple of years ago, or I guess not 2 years ago, last summer, I did a series of dinners around different parks in Vancouver.
Oh, wow.
I did not ask for City of Vancouver permission. Sorry, Vancouver. And it's important to me to have these types of art pieces that are accessible to the public, right, and where we can bring food and gather, because mm-hmm. traditionally in our teachings, food is love. Like, we relate right. to each other through food, mm-hmm. and that's how we begin our conversations and how yeah. we grow in communities.
Right. And your letters of poetry?
I've been working in poetry for years now.
Yeah.
And I have started a lot of paintings by firstly beginning with poetry, and I think that just going off of my art in a phenomenological perspective, I see how my body interacts with land wow. and separate from how my mind thinks.
Wow.
And I go off of what I feel and how I'm interacting with plants around me, or like the soil and how my feet dig into that type of rawness. Mm-hmm. And then I write from that. And yeah. I think that it's important to give back to the land. So when I aww. Write poetry, a lot of the times it'll be in letter format as well, to give to the mother and like the mother earth.
Wow. When I first met you, I had no idea that you were a writer. Yes. And like she has this new Instagram. What's the Instagram for that?
Braiding Reciprocity.
Yeah. And her poetry is so beautiful and it's so deep. So
thank you.
Yeah. So what do you think are the struggles for Indigenous women in our society today?
Let's start with the struggle for Indigenous peoples.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. In general. Right. I think one thing to take away from this anti-racism movement that is happening right now, mm-hmm. for not just Indigenous peoples, but also for Black people and people of color, yeah. is that this Canada and America are racist countries.
Right.
This is not to say that everyone who lives here is mm-hmm. racist, yeah. but the struggle for people who are not white is much greater.
Mm-hmm.
I personally am not, I'm not full Native.
Yeah.
I'm mixed and yeah. I will never know the experience of living as a visible minority.
Yeah.
I would like to say I recognize my privilege in this because yeah. that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
And my experience as a Native person is very different than my family's experience because right. me and my siblings are mixed. The largest struggle, in my opinion, as I cannot speak on behalf of every Indigenous person, only my own experience and my experience of reliving stories of mm-hmm. intergenerational trauma, is that the effects of colonialism on this country, on Indigenous communities and peoples, is massive.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that is not discussed or talked about in the media.
Mm-hmm.
And the media controls everything.
Yeah.
There are so many stereotypes and racism against Indigenous peoples in mm-hmm. this country and who are still struggling to find themselves.
Yeah.
The last residential school was closed in 1996 in Canada. And
wow.
that is not very long ago.
Yeah.
And when you put that into perspective, it creates this different sort of space where it's like, wow, this is not very long ago. How can we recognize the affects and trauma that these people are experiencing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And these are passed on through generations. And this is very recent history. We... Yeah. need to create platforms for people to speak. We need to give space and listen. And my question I ask people is, if you take away someone's culture, art, language, home, land, and force something upon them, they must learn to survive.
Yeah, no kidding.
How do you expect this group of people to flourish?
Right.
And one of my favorite quotes, and I'm blanking on the name of who wrote it here.
Yeah.
It was from an essay I read a couple of years ago, is, if you break the windows to my house, you are going to have to repair those windows before I even entertain an apology. And I think to bring this back to your question on Indigenous women, the struggle exists in the same light as all of this that I just mentioned, but in the space of intersectionality. When you're given the struggle of being a woman on top of a visible minority, our world is not built to support either of these things.
Right. Wow. You talk a lot about creating your artwork for our ancestors, that your work is for them, and to move yourself and your ancestors out of oppression.
Yes. My work as an artist is to work through pulling my ancestors out of oppression.
That's amazing.
Thank you. They live through me, and my purpose is to bring light to all of the dark.
Aww.
I am a very spiritual person, and yeah. in communicating from the outside world, mm-hmm. I bring that communication from storytelling, dreams, and visions into my work.
Wow. Yeah. Because your art and your posts lately, I've been reading, and they're just so deep.
Thank you.
So poetic. It's beautiful, really.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of your artwork lately has included much more Indigenous work. Tell us about that process and what it means to you.
This is a debate in the art history world. Oh. What does it mean to be a Native artist?
Oh, yeah.
I generally have a problem with the gallery space as...
Really?
Yeah, throughout history, work has been taken and gone on display as Indian art in Canada. Let me rephrase that. Art was stolen. Ceremonial pieces Wow. were stolen and put on display for show. Also, without proper acknowledgement, Mm. this is obviously a problem.
Yeah.
And many nations continue to wait for sacred pieces to be returned to their homeland. Aww. Another problem I have with gallery space is accessibility. The gallery space is generally a Eurocentric space historically and lacks accessibility for marginalized communities. So
what does that mean, Eurocentric?
The gallery space was created in Europe and was created for white men by white men, and it works in the same way when it was brought to the Americas and to Canada. It works in the way that is not entirely accessible to many marginalized communities. In art, there's a lot of rules that go into gallery spaces on how art needs to be hung, how it needs to be represented. And
You can just stick a banana on the wall and that's cool.
I suppose so. Marcel Duchamp. I like to engage with community and people in my work. This does not mean that I am against the gallery space as a whole. I just need to voice that historically it has been a problem, especially for Indigenous peoples.
Right.
I had a large cis, I will tell you a brief story.
Yeah.
So I had a large cis white male approach me at a bar last fall, and we arrived upon the topic of art.
Yeah.
Him claiming he was a professional art critic, and he said to me, "You need your work to look more native to sell. That's what people want. Be more native."
Okay.
And this conversation obviously did not carry on much further. An artist is who I am, and I do not know how to interact with the world any other way.
Right.
I do not create work for the sole purpose as to sell it. I create work for many reasons around mental health, culture, and to speak to my time in this moment. So when referring to my visual artwork, when creating work as a Native woman, many times people see me as a Native artist.
Oh.
This means the expectation to create work that looks Native is placed upon me. And when I work outside of this box that has been created for people like me, people don't want to engage with that type of work as much.
Because you're super versatile in all your paintings.
Thank you. Yeah, for me, I like to create both, and it depends on which medium and topic I'm working with.
Right.
I have practiced and learned formline for years, as well as developed a style that is my own in oil painting. And my latest collection I am working on at this moment has been a development of pushing those two worlds and styles together, which is highly important to me and my self-practice.
I remember you mentioning that, you know, because you do post your beautiful paintings and your artwork on Instagram, and that you've been getting a lot of backlash.
I have. I've been getting backlash just on my views as an Indigenous person in general.
Right.
I think that in this time and moment in history, people are finding it hard to engage with people who are not like them, or there's such a view on people who are not fitting societal norms, there's like an otherness placed on people, and I definitely feel that as an artist and as a person, and it's a strange time right now.
Totally.
But I think that our job right now as women and as artists and creative people is to educate audience and to speak openly about these things, because if someone doesn't know something, that's okay.
Yeah.
But if someone refuses to acknowledge that someone is unlike them or different from them and they have a problem with it, then that creates a problem and stops us in our society from moving forward.
There's just really so much there's so much learning to do right now, and also so much unlearning to do.
Exactly. It's a stepping away from a lot of our educational system and what we've been taught as young humans growing up, because those types of learning mechanisms have been embedded into our brains on how we're supposed to act, what role we play, especially looking at gender. I should say, because so many people feel like, oh, I'm a woman, so I need to fit into this societal norm of like what a woman
this
is, or exactly. And that goes for people of color, that goes for Native people. Yeah. It's a lot of people find it hard to step out of this box that was created by people who have no idea what it's like to be them.
Yeah. I feel like there's so many boxes per se. Like, exactly. If you think about like back, I don't know, like 40, 50 years ago, it was you take care of the kids and you don't work and you stay at home and you cook and you clean. And that was it. Mm-hmm. That was your role. Nowadays, I feel like people are putting themselves first more. This is a little off topic, but focusing on themselves. Mm-hmm. And it can be hard to be misconstrued these days, I think, as being selfish. Whereas back in the day, women just didn't really do much for themselves.
Right. You know? And that was a different type of box. I mean, yes. When I think of boxes, I think of masculine linear thinking of this has to be this way. And yeah. Like reading a book front to back, you yeah. know, it's
like even like marriages.
Exactly.
A man and a woman. And there's so many different relationships and we shouldn't be told how we want to live our life, really.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, there's just, yeah, it's interesting. So what do you, aside from a Native woman, what do you want or see our future for women to look like?
This is a large question.
Yeah, because we're kind of in this almost female empowerment the last few years especially, but it's kind of come back in this last week again.
Mm-hmm. I think I'll talk about this a little bit. I think I need more time or maybe an episode dedicated to just this. I need to firstly say that when I refer to women here, I'm referring to femmes, cis women, trans women, because they are women.
Yeah.
And also anyone who identifies themselves as a woman.
Right.
My personal pronouns are she and her. And right now, I would argue we are in our fourth wave of feminism.
Yeah.
We need to focus on intersectionality, which is a term founded by Kimberly Crenshaw, to see the intersections of how two things working against one another, such as a visible minority or race, along with being a woman, brings new meaning to notions around struggle. Mm-hmm. Before this, feminism was very highly centered around white women.
Right.
So to answer this question in a shorter format, I think that the inclusion and understanding of intersectionality is very important, as well as working together as women, having conversations, and to stop seeing each other as competition.
Yeah,
100%. Right? I have had many female friends, and I think that's really important to have as a woman.
Yeah.
Although it is rare for me to not get along with other women, yeah. I have had friendship breakups, which are the hardest, mm-hmm. Over simple disagreements or women seeing things as competition and mm-hmm. bad-mouthing each other to ruin reputations.
Yeah.
I simply don't have time or energy for this in my life, but I can also not say that when I was younger, I was not guilty of this.
Yeah.
Changes growth.
Yeah.
And this type of behavior is taught to us as young women as a thirst to get a seat at the table. And many women think that this means there is only room for one woman at that table. This is not the case.
No.
I want more opportunity for us as women.
Yeah.
Stepping away from our societal norms of the male gaze, which is anywhere and everywhere.
Yeah.
The matter of fact is that life is easier for men in general, but especially cisgendered white men. Mm-hmm. To travel is easier, to walk down the street without looking around for threats is easier, to buy things is easier, opportunity is easier, to gain a voice and have people listen to your work no matter which field you're in is easier.
Yeah.
And I often wonder, if a man had lived my life and my experience as me for just one day, how that would shift their perspective.
Right.
Men are linear thinkers.
Yeah.
And we as women are quantum thinkers, which means we think in circular motion and ideas. I think it's time for men to listen rather than try to fix.
Amen.
See rather than look and give space for women right now.
Yeah.
The world is just easier for men as it is created by men.
Yeah.
I love both men and women, but in order to create an equality and see each other as human, we must first create conversation and space to do so.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. That's amazing. So I was going through your Instagram a bit, and I came across...
Stalking me on Instagram.
I mean, not like I already didn't. And I came across, though, a post that I had never read, and because I do see most of your posts, but mm-hmm. this one was fairly deep, and it was about your PTSD and
yes.
losing a 2-year-long court case,
mm-hmm.
from which sounds like a really horrible person, if you're comfortable to talk about.
Yes, I think that I definitely am. I'm in a really good open place with that right now. Part of this is definitely reflected in how I work as an artist as well. I struggle with a lot of disassociation and staying in the present.
Mm-hmm.
I will begin by saying how grateful and privileged I am to have some people in my life who have stuck by me through Aww. This process.
Yeah.
In speaking about PTSD, I think everyone experiences this differently.
Yeah.
And a large amount of people that are not able to recover from these types of experiences are many of those that live in our downtown east side here in Vancouver Aww. And in poverty.
Yeah.
Our government needs to create a safer and more effective system to help these people.
More on the mental health, that's for
exactly. sure. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we need to humanize these people instead of alienating them.
Yeah.
My experience, which I hope to publish in writing someday, I was a victim of many types of abuse by my father that happened for a period of over 10 years of my life.
Wow.
Let me say that I will never know the life I could have had or the childhood I may have been able to experience.
Yeah.
To live freely as a child was not an option for me.
Aww.
I went through a case of around 2 years and my abuser was set free. This is
insane that it was your dad.
Exactly. And I lost a lot of family.
Oh, really?
This is not uncommon for abusers to get off free, especially straight, cisgender, white men.
Wow.
The system is built for them. And the struggle of going through the experience of a court case is incredibly traumatic in, I would assume, any country, especially as a woman and especially as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I was 17 when a large amount of my family and friends decided I was a rebellious teenager and I made the whole thing up when my abuser got off as proven not guilty. This justice system is exactly why I have been unable to come forth with other sexual assaults, such as incidents that occurred in this very photography industry from an ex and a few other incidents that I have experienced. I've not wanted to relive the process and know that many women have not wanted to come forward as the justice system is very, very hard on victims. In speaking about the effects of such traumatic events have on a person, it is impossible to forget and live without. And it is especially hard to have conversations with the right people and the right friends who do not place shame around you reaching out in times of help. What I have learned recently is that is to not assume people are comfortable talking about my life or comfortable talking about people who have experienced such events in their life.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say, like, this is not normal.
Yeah.
Let me repeat, this is not normal. I think we as women need to be reminded of that and not fall back into the realm of shame just to make others comfortable.
Yes.
I always tell people that you are every person you will ever meet. Your story becomes theirs and theirs becomes yours.
Yeah.
Everyone changes you and you take a piece of that, good or bad, and you learn from it.
Right.
I am here to speak for victims who do not have the privilege of being given space to speak for themselves, who have been silenced. I have one hand for me and I have one hand for them.
Aw. I really do hope that, you know, anybody listening right now that has dealt with any kind of, you know, anything horrible in their life, that they have the strength to come forward, because it's horrible to be able to, or to not be able to deal with that.
And not have
support.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And a lot of people end up getting shut out entirely as young people as well. And it's like, how are you supposed to, when you have something like that happen to you, how do you know who to trust? How do you know who to turn to? Mm-hmm. Right?
And when your own family doesn't believe you.
Like, exactly.
I don't think our government quite does enough for like mental health and things like that. And there are certain things that are covered, but I mean, I pay $100 to go to a therapy session. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a lot. And for someone that doesn't have, for someone that really needs that help and is on a low income.
Especially in such an expensive city too.
Yeah. And then they turn to, you know, other forms of healing themselves. Like
exactly. Because a lot of the time, like when I spent time sleeping on and off, God knows where.
Yeah.
But when I went through that rough patch in my life, I know that I was creating a lot of substance abuse to distract me from dealing with what was going on in my head. And right. I think that a lot of people are in that space who live in poverty or in our downtown east side. And we need to help those people. Yeah. And it's so much easier said than done. And a lot of people turn to those communities and say, oh, well, like they need to help themselves. And it's like, no, this is our community and we need to create platforms and safe spaces and learn how to work with these people, not for them or against them. It's like, how do we work with them and listen to them?
Okay. You know, we're giving out, you know, clean needles and homeless shelters and things like that. Why not dig deeper and actually give them mental health support? You know, find out why, what the root is of their problems, of why they're in that place in their life. You know,
I think there's not just one answer for this. No. There's so many different things that we need to do and need to put money into for food, for safety, for therapy, for counseling, but also realize that we need to help these people maintain their communities because they've invested really safe spaces in those communities and they trust those people. They're not going to, when they've had people working against them for so long, they're not going to trust just anyone.
Yeah.
Even if that person is a good person, you know, like that doesn't matter. We need to recognize, like, how can I support these people and like help them keep their community too? Because that's also equally as important.
Yeah. Okay. So let's lighten things up a bit. let's briefly switch to the bachelorette mode. Okay. You worked on a season, right?
Yes.
So can you tell us some behind the scenes that were kind of maybe different from what everyone else saw and how that experience was for you? Okay. Maybe good, maybe bad. I don't know.
First off, I only spent 4 days working on The Bachelor in Canada. Gosh. And it was all behind the scenes as well as assisting on their gallery photos.
Yeah.
I met some of the bachelors on there and later connected with them on social media.
Yeah.
Very lovely humans.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
And in working on the show, I was able to see how reality shows are produced and manipulated, how facial expressions are done, and they pick and choose which scenes they want to cut to get the right reaction from someone, even if it's from a different scene. And and it was just really interesting. I will say, however, that my time working on set was very different and very noticeably different than male crew and workers as well as photographers.
Right.
I was told to dress down, don't wear makeup, don't look attractive or be a distraction to the bachelors on the show.
Don't wear makeup. Don't be attractive. Yes.
And this is part of the problem I have in this industry is women are treated differently, period.
Sorry, you're saying that I'm not beautiful because I'm not wearing makeup? Like on the normal day, you don't even wear makeup and you're beautiful.
Yeah, thank you. I was told to wear baseball caps, dress tomboyish because don't get me wrong, like the people who created and were working on the show, amazing people.
Yeah.
And I think that this is no one's fault, but it's just become this norm in our industry if you're a woman, you have to look like this. And for this show in particular, it was we don't want to distract the bachelors from the bachelorette on the show. So no one else can look as attractive as she does. Every woman dressed down. Oh, and that's kind of how it went, which was very, it was just a very strange scenario to encounter. I understand it, but it also doesn't make sense.
Totally.
You know?
Like, it's a business. Like, I get it. It's a show. It's the show industry, but that's crazy. So we have a little bit of time left. And so let's talk about, like, kind of back to the very beginning of the podcast, how we've been working together for so long now.
Yes.
Because like I said, you made me feel so comfortable all the time. I mean, sometimes you're like, hey, you cannot wear that, but you're like, put that back on the shelf. No. But let's, like, chat about some, you know, favorite moments, funny moments, ridiculous.
Yes.
I don't know.
I want to say that makes me so happy. I love our friendship. Yes. And the fact that we have seen each other grow as
100%
people over the last 5 years, I think you're amazing.
Aww, you're so sweet.
What I do love about our friendship and working relationship as a stylist with you is that we can speak to each other as people and as women.
Yeah.
We have definitely created a safe space that I wish for everyone in any type of relationship.
Yeah.
I think when working together and pulling wardrobe with you and with any client, really, what I love to do is show the person's personality through their clothing.
Yeah.
I never want someone to not be themselves, but not everyone is able to see how much of their personality can be brought out in wardrobe, you know? That's where I come in. I want people to feel good because at the end of the day, it's about them, and confidence is so much brighter than something that hides a person's shape or places them into category of you look like this, so you can only wear that.
Yeah.
We are here to lift each other up, not create someone that we are not.
And I mean, we've heard the, can you, well, we've felt the whole cover up.
Yes. I cannot stand it. When men tell women what to wear, it drives me insane. Yeah. Or not even just, that makes me especially upset, but even just anyone body shaming people, it especially saddens me when women do it to each other. That's just not okay.
Well, I just remember, like, in a video in particular, when we were told, like, okay, let's put her in this. And then once we got those shots back, I didn't use any of them. And I was like, wow, I wish that I
stuck
to the original outfit that Prudence picked for me.
Exactly. You know? And that was a particularly hard moment to watch happen as well, because
and I was
it was like, let's cover up her body because we don't want to see all of it. And it's like, how do you think that that makes her feel? You know, that's just not, that's just not okay.
Yeah. And we kept on being like, okay, no. And then he kept on pushing. But it's, you know what? Okay, but let's talk about, we've done, like, so many projects together now. Okay, how about the winter scenes for Come Find Me?
That was so fun. Do you remember that? Do you remember when we were in the snow shooting? Okay, it was so cold. And I remember we were running out and throwing blankets all over you. And I was like trying to fix your wardrobe out in this like minus whatever.
When we were in the grapevine.
It was
in the
so cold. We had two young men working with us who were assisting us.
Yeah.
And they were so sweet.
Yes, they were.
And I just remember I was freezing cold and they were picking me up in the snow and holding me up. They were taking my boots off my feet and throw and changing hot pads so my feet could be warm in my boots. But it was so humorous and I really wish that someone caught it on camera.
Oh my gosh. Because Prudence, like, she's from Vancouver area, so she's never really not spent that much time in the snow.
I like to be inside with snow.
Yes.
I love the snow when I'm, say, in Banff, or I could deal with the snow if I was in New York because I just would look so good in the snow in New York.
Not that much snow in New York. But anyways, our feet were like freezing. We felt like they were going to fall off, but it was still fun. And also on that video shoot, I've learned this the hard way. When you hire a makeup artist, you need to always do either a consultation with them. Or B, it has to be through word of mouth of like, okay.
Or like someone that you've worked with before.
Yeah. And so I hired this girl and her website was all like from LA, like I'm the best makeup artist ever. And I will never forget when I walked out of the bathroom and...
So, okay. So basically what I had directed this woman to do this beautiful face of makeup on you for your video shoot, Confine Me. Yeah. And I thought I had left her in really good instructions. You trusted her. So I was like, okay, great. Lisa, trust her. I don't know who she is. I've never worked with her, but...
She was local.
Yes. And I remember walking into the bathroom and
I was probably looking at you with fear.
Yes. And your face was completely white ghost, like dots of red on your cheeks. And I was going,
not because I was like scared, but like it was the makeup.
The makeup was so bad. It was so terrible.
It was the worst I've ever experienced in my life.
But now we can laugh about it. In the moment, we were not laughing about it.
And it also took her like 2 hours to do hair and makeup.
I think it was more like three. It was so crazy. Let me just say that she was drinking a lot of wine. We were shooting at a vineyard.
Yes.
And so there was wine. So she was drinking it while she was working, which is...
And we started early. Yes.
We started at like six in the morning. Okay.
Oh my God. Yeah, I definitely look like a ghost. It was like, okay, you need to take that all off and start over. Okay, what other funny moments do we have?
What about Suzanne that we did? Yes. What a beautiful woman, I will say.
She's amazing.
She was such good energy. She was our photographer that we used on a shoot last October.
Yeah.
And
for my new album that's going to be coming out. So and for the exciting. Wait on Me stuff.
And your new album and all the songs are amazing. I'm so excited. Yeah, you got to listen. I just remember she's the type of woman that will do anything to get the shot.
Yes.
And we were in, what was it, like a lake or something?
We were making our way up to waterfalls. Mm-hmm. And she literally laid down in the creek. First of all, she gave me her gumboots to walk through the creek because I didn't have proper shoes. Mm-hmm. And then she was standing in that creek water and it was cold. And like, it was
barefoot.
And then she was like laying down in the creek bed.
That was insane. We have photos of that too.
We do.
We're going to have to share those at some point. Had pneumonia. That was so awful.
My God.
I get sick so easily.
Poor Prudence. And you just like trucked on just like no other.
I think I probably lost like 10 pounds that month. God. That was bad.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So don't get pneumonia, kids. Don't get pneumonia.
Yeah, I guess the first like photo shoot we started on was Confine Me. That's when I first met you. For that album, The Little White House Co.
We had so much fun together.
It was so fun. And and like over the years, it's just become so much more fun. Like whenever we're on set together, you're literally my little saving grace. Where I'm, you know, whenever I'm feeling anxious or like, Prudence, I just don't like how this is going. You're always just in my corner. And we're always all pretty much most of the time on the same page.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah. We have a really good... Mm-hmm. communication skills together.
Yeah,
no, I love so that.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
That was so fun, and I love working with you, and I'm so excited to work with you further for the rest of our lives.
Me too. Me too.
So give us your Instagram and your social media handles, wherever you want to send people.
You guys can follow me. My Instagram handle is Oh So Prudence. And
I will link
it's
that
exactly how it sounds. And I'm really looking forward to us working on future things together. Awesome. Future art.
Me too. Thank you so much for listening. If you have a moment to leave a review on whichever platform you're listening from, that would be awesome. And I would love to hear from you over on Instagram at Lisa Nicole Music. I'll see you next week.